fake that. You either are or you aren't. And I missed that part culturally growing. I didn't get the language, I didn't get the food, and I didn't get the coolness.
You just brought up something. You're right. We did have this conversation earlier, and you just brought up something that's very profound. As we talk about being aware of what influences our thinking, which is one of the steps to help us not to get to fall into the, not to become trapped in group thinking, become trapped in the herd mentality, is also cultural. Because as you shared, you know, you look at someone from India, which is in Asia, someone from India, they have a particular type of food that they just grow up being attracted to, having a taste for. Then you go to another part of India, I mean, another part of Asia, and I know Asia is a huge continent, but stick with me. You go to another part of Asia and Korea, and they have a whole nother, you know, palate and things that they enjoy, foods that they like, way they want things spiced and seasoned and prepared. And you're like, man, how did a child at such a young age say, this is the type of food that I like? It's just given to them. You wake up one day and someone puts clothes on you and you say, okay, I like these clothes. Boys wear pants, girls wear dresses. And I know I'm getting old school here, but stick with me just for the illustration point. This is what we eat on Thanksgiving. You know, you eat turkey, dressing, cranberry sauce, roll it out, sweet potato pie, pumpkin pie. You know, roll it out. This is what you do. Why? Because that's what we've always done. It's part of our culture. But the clearer we can become about what our culture has taught us, even culture teaches us how we're supposed to respond to situations. How do you respond when someone slights you? You know, there's some cultures that a public embarrassment requires someone to die. You know, our culture is more of a fist
fight. I don't mean to laugh. I just wasn't expecting that. But yeah, you're right. That's a quite extreme, right?
But yeah. It is. It is what it is. You know, in some cultures, man, you disrespect a man's wife or his family. That's it. Somebody's got to die. It's no, we have a fist fight or, hey, man, I'm sorry. No. But the more we can become aware of how culture influenced our thinking, how culture influenced how we view various situations, then the clearer we can become about, okay, this is what culture told me. And, you know, I love being an African-American. I wouldn't trade it as with all of the hardships that we have experienced as Blacks here in America, with all of the injustices that have been heaped upon us and the lack of reparations that we've received. I'll be honest with you. I wouldn't change it for the world. I love being Black. And not only that, I love the subculture of the African-American community, which is Washington, D.C. I love being from Southeast Washington, D.C. I love the carry out. I love my go-go. I love it all, man.
I watch you morph and transform whenever I've been with you in D.C. I've watched you go from this to a completely that whole sub. I mean, it just subsumes you when you get in it, from the way you dress to the way you walk to the food that you eat. It's cool to see. It's really cool to see.
And I actually see it. I'll be honest with you. When I come into D.C., especially when I cross over into Anacostia and I'm in Southeast proper, man, I get around the big chair going up Martin Luther King Avenue, all that stuff. Man, I'm a totally different person. I actually sense it. I've actually sensed something come over me. And I know now I'm able to put a word to it or to put language around it. But before, I just felt it without being able to articulate it. But it's important to be able not only to feel it in your bones. My wife is from Jamaica, and she talks about how when she goes back to Jamaica, something about the soil just tells her that this is where you belong. Especially when she walks on the soil of the land that her family owns, it's just like, man, this is me. This is my heritage. This is who I am. The food, the smell, the accent, the everything. It's just, but again, back to leadership. The clearer we can become about how we have been influenced, the clearer we can develop strategies to push us forward. The second thing that I want to share, the second thing about authentic leaders and how they manage the togetherness forces, number one, they themselves become very aware. The second thing is authentic leaders are able to develop solutions based on their individual best thinking, using their guiding principles. So when leaders recognize a problem, leaders stop and say, okay, what is my thinking around this? What are the guiding principles that I need to grab a hold to help me to think about how to solve this problem? And I'll throw it back to you, Raphael, because and since we're on law enforcement, let's just ride this horse until it collapses. I mean, let's just ride it all the way out. But you know, when you talk about intervening, and here in the state of Colorado now, they have this thing called the duty to intervene. So officers actually are required by law to intervene when they see an officer abusing a citizen. But without the law being in place, and even with the law being in place, people are not always following it. But without the law being in place, or with the law being in place, whatever. And I just lost my train of thought. I was thinking about guiding principles, about being able to pause in that moment, and how your guiding principles, I'm throwing it back to you, how have your guiding principles, both in law enforcement and in banking, kind of influenced how you navigated, you know, touchy, sticky situations?
Yeah, I mean, some of this is 2020, and some of the guiding principles that I have now, I didn't always have, you know, throughout my life. But I've always wanted to make sure that I humanize everyone that I interact with, and that's not I've not always been perfect with that, but I've always seen that starts the problem. Whether you're dealing with someone's public safety or whether you're dealing with someone's money.
Yeah.
The more you humanize someone, in my experience, the more you humanize someone, the more you get them to be as human as you are, or even more human than yourself, if need be, the more you can say, ah, I wouldn't want this happening to me. I wouldn't want to be on the other end of this. That has always been helpful in my decision making. Being able to think, you know, I mean, I've encountered people who, and you see this in law enforcement all the time, where you saw, especially it happened in Ferguson, where you had all of this high occurrence of traffic stops that were basically intended to get people into the system to pay, you know, traffic violations and things of that nature.
Yeah.
And I started to realize, I think a year in, I grew up in the inner city. So this is stuff that isn't unfamiliar to me. I grew up in the inner city. So I knew kind of subconsciously what happens when someone gets put into the system and how that impacts them. And as I got into, you know, kind of my first, you know, year into law enforcement, I started to realize, wow, this person is coming back from work. They did a rolling stop. I pulled them over. They're coming back from a midnight shift. This is a job that they have. They're living paycheck to paycheck. If I write this person this ticket for rolling through a stop sign in the middle of the night when clearly no one was, it's stuff that I do, stuff that I would do, even when I was not. In fact, I did have this conversation. Remember, I worked in one patrol division. The officers loved to run radar, and they would catch people balling down the highway. And then we would get off our shift, and these guys would go home driving in excess of 100 miles an hour. And so the next night when we go to work, they'd say, are you ready to run radar? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Should we be doing that? I mean, when we tear out of here, we drive like bats out of hell. And we are not following the law ourselves. And we know that we've got to get out of jail free card because we've got our badge. So we're not going to get a ticket. So I said, I just don't feel comfortable writing someone a ticket for something that I do or that I see you do. Of course, that didn't really go over well, but I couldn't
land like a lead balloon. Huh?
Yeah. So I couldn't really grow it. So in that, the point I was making is earlier is that, you know, you pull someone over, they rolled through a stop sign. They didn't really, nothing bad happened. There wasn't even really the potential of anything bad happen. This was just me being on patrol, looking for suspicious activity and looking for a reason to see it. But once I contact the person, they say, I'm coming from work. you know, it's late. I asked for the driver's license and they're got a suspended driver's license. Ah, you know, now what do I do? Am I really going to lock this guy up? I mean, he really shouldn't be. Really, now I have a duty to arrest, be honest with you. I mean, I still have discretion, but I really should be arresting this person. But then I start thinking to myself, most of the people don't understand this. So there's a whole system here, and I'll make this as quick as I can here. But this guy's driver's license was suspended. I'm thinking about this in memory because of lack of child support. Now you say, well, he was a deadbeat dad. Okay, maybe he was, or maybe the job that he had didn't cover enough money for him to pay the child support. I don't know. But the guy's out here working, throwing him in jail and making him post bond is not going to help with that situation. Maybe he's trying to crawl his way out of it. And I just thought, this is, let me just let this guy be. And I've done that many times where I've said, you know, a suspended driver's license because he didn't pay child support and he's trying to go to work and there's no real active, great public transportation system for him to get to and from the work. It's not like he's in D.C. You know, this is a different situation. Yeah, it's a different situation. So it's not like I can say, look, man, I gotta take you in and you just got to catch the bus and the train everywhere. It just wasn't like that. So I think what we started with this was what makes those decisions. And I think it's just humanizing people and not seeing them as just a lawbreaker. This is a human being trying to struggle out here. And I make a situation 10 times worse here, even though he probably, you know, he's justified. I'm justified in doing it. Yeah. I just have to ask myself, what is happening to this human being here? What is it? How is this going to affect this human being? Not just some number, just some arrest that I just take down and just forget about. And the same thing with banking. Sorry, we saw in the financial crisis, right? The same thing with banking. You have to think about how is this affecting someone who's worked all their life and now they have no retirement? Like, you know, this is got to think about that.
And therein is the guiding principle. So the guiding principle, just if I could articulate this for me, is I believe, because guiding principles always start off with what you believe. I believe in humanizing human beings. You know, that's kind of how I take it. I believe, and if you take that guiding principle, because number two is authentic leaders are able to develop solutions based on their individual best thinking using their guiding principles. Guiding principle, I believe in humanizing human beings. Now, how do I develop a solution for this problem of a guy who just rolled through a stop sign, this guy who just, you know, ran through a red light or whatever it may be? How do I apply that guiding principle? And we use law enforcement, but this goes to every aspect. And this is.
Can I interject here, though? I mean, this is kind of a moral dilemma here in that instance, because I would have been just as justified and right. I would have been right. Well, maybe less right to let him go, but certainly right to enforce the law. You know, so if I had decided to arrest him, that would not have been me not humanizing him. I still could have had to make a hard decision here. I could have just said, hey, I'm sorry, this sucks, but you broke the law. You shouldn't be driving. I got to take you in. I would have been right to do that. And I would not have been dehumanizing him. I think that's why I said it's kind of overhumanizing or trying to really, really get myself into his shoes made me make a different decision on that. But the reason why I'm saying that is because you said that, you know, you make decisions based on your guiding principles. What is a part of that, and I think what's baked into that, is that you have to make hard choices. Your guiding principles help you to make those hard choices.
And that's exactly. And the more often we recite to ourselves and recite to others what our guiding principles are, and the more often that we're intentional, because, you know, you have those split second decisions you have to make. Well, the more you spend time working on thinking about what you believe and how it applies in various situations and rehearsing what you had to go throughout the day and saying, okay, what would have been a better way for me to approach it? How could I have lived out my values and things? The more you do that, that's why great athletes, great teams, they study films, not just of the game they're about to play, but of the game that they just finished playing. That's why great boxers are constantly trying to correct the mistakes that they made. They're also constantly working on little small minute things to try to improve. And leaders, that's what it takes. Leaders who lead have to look at themselves in many ways like athletes do and constantly are practicing those disciplines of thinking. Again, the greatest attribute of a leader is the leader's ability to think, to come up with solutions based on their guiding principles, to think and to come up with the best solutions using their guiding principles as a template. All right, let's look at number three. Number three, the third thing about an authentic leader, and boy, we're having a great conversation. We're going to wrap this up. Third thing is authentic leaders are able to foster a healthy balance of togetherness and separation within their teams. They're able to, not just within themselves, the first two are about themselves, but this one is about within their teams. And this is the more difficult one. How do I have a healthy balance between individualism? Because you can think about it as a leader, we don't want people just sitting there doing, you know, going in their own direction. Hey, well, why didn't you finish the project? I mean, you know, I'm an individual. And as I thought about it, I thought it'd be better, man, for me to spend more time doing this. Well, man, you know, we need to kind of think as a group. We need to, and sometimes in problem solving, we need to problem solve thinking about its impact. You know, lawyers are really good about developing solutions on how it's going to end, how a particular situation impacts an organization that they represent. You know, and so the group thinking is sometimes a positive thing, but then also we don't want our people to get locked into that so that, again, they're always thinking like lawyers. They're not being creative. And then we don't want to one side to with this all caught into togetherness and all caught into the individuality. And so a great leader, an authentic leader, is able to foster a healthy balance of togetherness and separateness within their teams. And Dr. Murray Bowen described a roadmap that allows leaders to create a more separateness among their teams without leaning too much toward individualism. So how to create a separateness, he shows how you can create separateness among your team without becoming too individualistic. If we follow this roadmap, it will even help us to be able to be close to those who are different from us and even oppose our point of view without needing to separate from them. So again, there's that healthy balance. I'm gonna give you this roadmap very quickly. Again, leaders, this is how you create that type of atmosphere within your job. This is how you help to balance. Here's the roadmap that Murray Bowen gave us toward number three. And the roadmap for leaders to counter to togetherness forces. Here they are. Leaders model healthy individualism by stating what she or he will and will not do. Just by articulating with some degree of consistency, this is what I'm responsible for. This is who I'm responsible to. This is what I will do. This is what I will not do. Just by you as a leader sharing that with your team, both in group settings and in individual settings, by you doing that, it actually models, and there's the word I love, it models healthy individualism. And as Raphael just hit a moment ago, he felt more courageous leaving law enforcement in the going into the private sector, into the banking sector, by leaders modeling their courage in saying what they believe and what they think. It actually inspires courage in others. It inspires courage in others. The second thing is leaders encourage members to share their thoughts and opinions separate from the team. And we talked about this in one of our previous broadcasts, and that is leaders actually sit down with their team members and says, I want to hear your thinking. The more that a leader sits down with the key members of their team, and I use the key members because if you are responsible for 100 people, that's not really realistic. So you kind of have to pull out of that the key members of your leadership team and develop a system whereby you listen to them individually. I want to hear your thinking. Or, you know, why we're not meeting as a group? Because I want to hear what you think. I don't want to hear what the group thinks. I want to hear what you personally think. I want to hear how you're viewing this. And giving your team, individual team members, the opportunity to articulate themselves, their thoughts, their opinions, their beliefs, all those things, it actually fosters within your team the ability to be more of an individual just by you asking them these questions. And one of the things, and I shared this before about parenting, is just literally sitting down with your children and saying, Tell me, what do you think about? And you fill in that blank of what the about is. I want to understand, what do you think about inclusiveness? We've had this conversation most recently with our children. What do you think about inclusiveness as it relates to the LGBTQ community? What does that mean to you? I want to hear your thinking. What do you think about your responsibility to your community, the African-American community? Tell me what you're thinking about this. And of course, you know, you're going to do this on an age, at an age appropriate level. But what is your thinking about kids or how to treat kids who are bullies at school? And, you know, when you say that, especially like if they're five or six, they're going to come and say, yeah, there's a kid in my school. His name is John. He's always teasing and picking on people. And Johnny's always on his that and the other. Sorry, all the Johnnies out there who don't bully people. But John is. But tell me, what is your thinking? How do you think people should handle this? When they come to you with problems, rather than parents, a lot of times we like to jump right into solving mode. Instead, and this goes back to our teams as well, the skill is transferable from home and work. Well, tell me, what are you thinking about this? How do you think this situation should be approached? I'm very interested in hearing your thinking. That actually helps to create individualism within your various team members, within your various family members. Raphael, you just jump right in because I'm running through this because I'm looking at the clock. But you,
I know. And now this is gold, because I think my concern is always that, you know, the leader may not want groupthink to happen, but are they being, as you mentioned, is the leader being intentional about the environment that they're creating? So you say, I don't want groupthink, but the minute someone offers something, you either shoot it down in front of the rest of the group, or you are, you know, I can be pretty direct, right? You know me, we've known each other. So I shoot things down all the time, but I have to be intentional. Okay, if that's between you and I, we get in our leadership team, and I must apologize. I think I've done this before in some of our marketing meetings where I've just kind of just said, enough, shut it down. This is what we're going to do. You know, just trying to, my justification is to just move along with the meeting. But a lot of times is, you know, if you weren't the boss and you were a direct report, you might be like, well, I can't open my mouth in these meetings because, you know, RP is just going to shoot me down. Even though I say, no, I want you to speak up. I want you to be, but is my behavior encouraging that? Is there another way to say, to be able to address that, hey, I don't necessarily agree, or I, you know, help me understand this a little bit better before I just shoot it down. And the second thing is, you bring up a good point, and I don't think that this has been teased out enough. But this individual discussion where you say, hey, we've got a problem. I'm going to bring each individual of the team in, or a few individuals. I'm going to ask them, what do you think about this? And then when we bring the group together, they've already been comfortable with being an individual, and I can now create an environment that is safe and foster an environment where each individual, now we can have a group discussion, and they know that I've been at least receptive to their solutions. But now what I'm trying to do is get to the best solutions. So I bring everybody back together and we all hash it out. And maybe something that, let's give Johnny a good example here. Maybe a good idea that John has given, you know, Simon now can build upon that. So, I didn't even see that, or what. So you have to create this environment that says, and you have to be intentional about it, because it's one thing to say, I mean, I've heard this in leaders and I've said it before, you know, we don't want groupthink. We don't want herd mentality. We want everybody to be able to express themselves. And yet the minute that someone does, you know, we just fire off a shot right between the eyeballs and our actions completely say something different.
And undermines what we claim that we're trying to accomplish. And another tactic, another strategy that's very successful is when you share while you're having the group meeting. You know, Cynthia, you shared something when you and I were talking that I really was, I'm interested in exploring a little bit more. You mentioned that perhaps we should explore A, B, and C. Do you mind sharing with the team what your thinking is around that? So, you know, so now you are, again, fostering and encouraging. And you may not even ask her follow-up questions when you have the one-to-one meeting, because you want to use the group meeting as an opportunity to pull even more thinking out of her. And as you do that within the team, you shared this. I thought that I was interested in learning more about it. Can you share with the whole team what your thinking is about this? And again, that stirs up and gives individuals an opportunity to use their best thinking.
I think one more thing here. Even in that, it would be interesting for a leader to even ask Cynthia for her input and to say, I didn't necessarily see the value, or I didn't really get it fully, but I want to give everybody else a chance to hear this thinking, because it might be the right way to go. And I may be missing something. Give other people a chance to even interact in a way. I mean, as long as you're not setting it up to where you say, hey, I'm setting Cynthia up for everybody to take pot shots at her. That's not what we're doing here. What I'm saying is that she had I think it is a good idea, but I have some reservations about it. Listen to this idea and then tell me why it's a good idea. Tell me why we should go with it. You know, give other people a chance.
I want to hear what others are thinking about what Cynthia has shared. Yeah, and you shared something just a moment ago about the leader's presence. And this takes us to number three. When we talk about the roadmap to counter the togetherness forces. And number three is leaders think through how they will be present and remain calm during times of fear and anxiety within the group. So I know that there's going to be, especially when we're talking about change and things of that nature, especially when there are crises, when there's high, anxious times that just happen naturally, deadlines, things of that nature. Leaders think through how they will be present and how they're going to remain calm when everything hits the fan.
We do a lot of thinking through that, right? It just seems like the fan is always on in our organization and stuff is always flying into it.
Hey, this is how we're going to remain calm during this particular situation. This That's is how
right. And there is coffee in this cup, not Jack Daniels.
Although depending on which meeting we're having, the beverage in the mug can change. I mean, hey, we got to get through these meetings. But how do I want to show up? But more than how am I going to remain calm? As you think about the different, personalities within your group, because as you, again, you may have personalities in your group so that when you ask Cynthia, her thinking, that automatically Sally is going to attack whatever Cynthia says. You've noticed that dynamic in their relationship. So how am I going to remain calm while tactfully addressing when this, since I'm almost 90% sure it's going to happen, how am I going to remain calm? And literally thinking through that, which goes to number four, I might as well just push up number four right now. Leaders practice how they will respond when they receive pushback from their principal stands. So there again, help to create, as I'm thinking about the individual, creating more of a space for individuality, then I also think about, not only am I going to practice my calmness, not only am I going to think through how I want to be present, but I'm also going to practice how I intend to respond. What volume do I want to use? What tone of voice do I want to use? What word selection do I want to use? So again, when Sally starts pushing back on Cynthia, or when James starts talking in a condescending way to Cynthia. I just had a situation, I got to share it. I was at the UPS store and the manager a lady thought that someone had jumped in front of her. She confronted the situation. She was actually incorrect. And so the manager says to her, "Dear, nobody's jumping in front of you." And this was an older African-American lady, and the manager calls her dear. So I tell the manager, and I tried to do it in as calm a way as possible. I actually thought through how I wanted to share it before I just jumped out and shared it. I said, "Sir, can you come in for a moment?" And I whispered to him, I said, it's quite condescending to call an adult woman dear. Dear, sweetie, precious, sweetheart, those are terms that you typically use when you're talking to your a child. That's not a term that you would use when you're talking to an adult. And I just kind of wanted to give you a heads up about that, that that's condescending. And but in that moment, and this just happened about 3 or 4 days ago, in that moment, I thought through how am I going to, what tone of voice, what volume, what words am I going to use to help this gentleman to understand that it's not appropriate to call an adult woman dear. And, you know, and I had to learn this myself. I know I'm way off subject. I apologize, everyone. But, you know, coming out of the pastorate, especially younger women, you know, in their 20s and stuff, I was calling them sweetheart, you know, darling, all that other stuff. And someone had to pull me to the side and check me and say, you know, I say check, but it wasn't really a check. It was an educate. They had to educate me. You're not a pastor anymore. And in this environment, yes, that's cool. Pastor Davis, who is viewed as a father figure, can talk to his members in that way when he sees them at church and stuff. But man,
it's the culture. It's the culture. Yeah. It's accepted in the culture. Right.
It's accepted in the culture. Man, that's insulting. Yeah, that's insulting. So that's what leaders do. Leaders practice how they will respond when they receive inevitable pushback. This is the volume. This is the word selection. This is the body posture. Use the mirror, all that stuff. This is actually how I'm going to respond. By doing that, just by leading by example, it actually creates more of a culture than any other strategy technique. That is why leaders must focus on themselves and how they're showing up. And that's what Unbox the Lead attempts to do. We try to help leaders, coach leaders, to say, okay, this is how I want to show up. This is who I want to be, so that the authentic leader reveals itself in every place. We went over a lot today, Raphael. I'm glad that you were patient with me. I'm glad that our listeners were patient with me as well.
It was a great show. And I still had one more thing to add, but sometimes the best, thing,
come on, we might,
no, listen, the best thing said is not to say it.
We've come this far. Might as well.
Yeah, we might as well. All right. You know, you talk about leaders thinking things through before they, you know, the posture, what you want to say, how you want to say it. I think one of the challenges that I've had when doing that exercise is the ongoing dialogue in my head. So I think, okay, Cynthia is going to have this reaction. Alejandro is going to have this reaction. You know, so-and-so is going to have this reaction. And I start thinking and anticipating what they might say and how I might respond to that and how I, you know, and what they're going to say. And I end up having this full conversation in my head, reacting to the way that I think about things. And I think what I've started to do recently is the exercise of, okay, well, what if instead they say this, they say that, something completely different, something completely on the other side of the way that I'm thinking. And I'm not doing that to anticipate how they're thinking. I'm doing that as an exercise to show how I'm thinking. Here is the way that I am projecting. Here are the things that I'm projecting into this situation that I probably just need to stop that. I think what I need to do is, like you said, how am I going to remain calm? But I don't want to anticipate what they're going to say and how I'm going to answer word for word. Because I think that what that does is it takes away your ability to actually be present in the situation. Because a lot of times we prepare ourselves for something that someone may say. And I've seen this happen I've seen this happen a lot, where someone is having an argument or a discussion with someone and you're kind of like, I don't even think they're having the same conversation. Like, this person is stuck on this issue, and they're not really addressing what the person is actually saying. They seem to be addressing something that they've been thinking about prior to them coming to the conversation. Does that make sense? I think I found myself in that situation where the person is saying, no, listen to me. That's not what I'm saying. And the person just isn't able to connect with what the person is actually saying, because in their head, they're constantly thinking about what they were anticipating the person to say. So when they get in a real moment, they completely miss what they're saying. So I've come to this situation thinking, oh, Robert's going to say X, Y, and Z if I say this. Then I get to the situation and Robert says A, B, C. But I'm still behaving as if you said X, Y, and Z, because in my head, I haven't let that go. And it's kind of like, and you're thinking, but I'm saying exactly what you're saying. Like, what's the problem here? Was because prior to getting to this meeting,
I'm not gonna leave until I get one.
That's right. I came for a fight. I can't. I've got my gloves. I've got everything. I've got my sword. I've got all the equipment here. I plan to use it. And you're saying you're raising the white flag.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, that's not what I wanted.
You know, you've got to be present and say, okay, there's a white flag going up here. Now I need to deal with that.
Which goes back to the point that we just made. Leaders practice how they will respond, and also leaders think through how they will be present, as you just shared. They think through that so that when they get hit, it doesn't make a difference. Even though the person may hit them in a certain way, they're saying, this is the way I want to be present. And the person may switch it all up on them, but because they have been intentional about thinking through how they want to be present, even when it gets mixed up on them, it doesn't change how they show up.
I've seen this in email exchanges where people read into tone. Messages. Yeah, they don't. And then you get to the person, and all of a sudden, it's like a complete different experience. There, you read the email as being a call to arms, you know, a shot across the bow, and then you go and you physically talk to the person. It's a completely different experience. I mean, they're just as nice and they just. I think you have to be an expert, right? We have to have a show about this. You really need to know how to write in the world of email. If you don't know how to write, all kinds of bad things can happen. That's
really a big one. Off topic, but I want to tell everybody, you've got to Google. Is it Key and Peele? Those are the comedians that do their little satirical show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You got to watch Key and Peele. Google Key and Peele. Text message exchange. It really goes through that, because one person is laughing because they're thinking that the other person who's screaming and hollering at them and insulting them is joking. And the other person is just losing it and becoming unglued. It's hilarious. Watch Key and Peele, the text message exchange.
I think the last 45 minutes of this show needs to be entitled, after the show. Anyway. All right. Well, this has been great. I think we definitely should leave it here. I hope that this has been of some value to our listeners here as we talked about leadership and groupthink. We do want to remind you to sign up for the free webinar that we have coming up here in a couple weeks, or sooner than that, I believe, talking about sabotage. And remember, that's free. So please feel free to take advantage of that. To learn more about what we do, please visit our website, www.unboxedtolead.com, and we'll leave it here. Thank you once again for joining us on the Unbox broadcast.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxedtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number 2, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number 2, to lead.com.